broadcasting from Singapore and broadcasting all around the world. You're listening to the EdTech Chat Podcast, taking the pulse of educators from all over the globe and bringing what you need every week. Now, over to your host, Craig Kemp.
Hello and welcome to episode 8 of the EdTech Chat Podcast. I'm your host, Craig Kemp, and I'm thrilled to have your support. This podcast is sponsored by Schoolbox. Schoolbox is an all-in-one learning management system, or LMS, community portal and engagement platform for K-12 schools. Schoolbox makes your life easy with everything you need at the touch of a button, all in one place, so your school can connect, communicate, and collaborate with parents, teachers, students, and your school community from one platform. To add to this, you'll be able to enhance daily workflows and centralize your systems with their seamless market-leading student information system and third-party integrations. Get connected at schoolbox.com.au. The links are in the description below. As a bonus, listen along at the end of this episode to win 1 hour of free consultancy from a Schoolbox educator. As I've shared before, I continue to work with the incredibly talented Mark Quinn to improve the final audio quality of this podcast. He has his own podcast production studio that provides editing and mastering services to content creators. To connect with Mark, please see the details in the podcast notes below. Last week, I talked about the importance of human resources and gave some specific advice on how you can implement successful EdTech PD in your school. This week, I wanted to talk a little bit more about professional learning. What's your focus for the rest of 2020? If you're starting a new school year in August 2020, what's the focus for semester one? And where does EdTech get infused? If you run the Southern Hemisphere school year and you're currently mid-year, how do you embrace EdTech PD for the second half of your year so that you and your colleagues can thrive? I look forward to hearing from you on social media. Thank you for your questions. This week, I wanted to discuss one question from a conversation I had this week with Education Perfect's leader, Tim Vaughan. During our discussion, he asked me, what are schools looking for when it comes to professional learning at times like this? And how can EdTech companies like Education Perfect be better at supporting schools? It really got me thinking, and I wanted to share my ideas with you in a more global forum, with the hope that schools will be better at expressing their needs to EdTech companies, and EdTech companies will be better at solving schools' specific and unique needs, rather than just making a sale. To answer Tim's question about how EdTech companies can better support schools, I use the case study of my previous role as the EdTech director at a large international school here in Singapore, where I was constantly swamped with companies wanting to sell me their products. However, I felt 99% of the time they were there to make a sale, without a care in the world for my problems and how to solve them. This always resulted in me probably ignoring follow-up emails and calls because I simply don't have time for it. There are two roles to play here, the school and the EdTech company. As a school, before any support can help, you have to be in a strategic position to want support. That means not only your leadership team is supportive of learning opportunities related to solving specific problems, but your teachers, students, and the school community have brought into it as well. What I'm saying is, are you in a position where your school, culture, and strategic plans are in a good place to work with EdTech companies? If not, then you know where to start, and some of my previous podcast episodes highlight ways of getting there, so go back and have a listen. As a school, goals and strategic intents are essentially created to help solve problems. Whether it's a low literacy achievement score, a decrease in reading assessments, or a language learning requirement, schools write their strategic goals in order to help solve their problems. Openly share these with EdTech companies in your initial discussions to see if their product is a good fit for your needs. If not, then it's always going to be hard at a leadership level to justify the expense and the time spent learning and using a new tool. If a company can help you solve one of your goals, then it's time to get down to business. Testing, getting demos, and trialing of their problem-solving tool or program. Ask the tough questions and make sure that they know what you need and what you want. Ask specific questions about training and support. These are the key areas for you to achieve success with any new rollout. Do they have teachers on their staff that have used this product before, or people that have worked inside a school environment that understands how to implement a new system or tool? That's the hard part. As an EdTech company, my advice to you is to listen more and talk less. I do a lot of work as an advisor and connector to EdTech companies from all over the globe, and a lot of my consultancy work comes from my experience and connections in the industry. EdTech companies need to get to know their clients and identify their why and their problems so that they can match their product to your unique needs. A one-size-fits-all solution is not what schools want or need. Be genuine and transparent, and remember that solving the problem is the key here, so invest time in the schools that you're connecting with. Time is money. If you want the sale, you have to be willing to put in the time. That means that schools specifically will want to know what professional learning support you'll provide and how you can help them be successful with implementation. As an example, Schoolbox, mentioned earlier in this episode, has an intentional hiring philosophy to make sure they have highly qualified and experienced teachers, and their quotes always include a significant more amount of professional learning time than many other LMS companies. This is not because their tool is more complicated, it's because they value the process of learning in order to have a successful implementation of their product. More EdTech companies need to follow their lead. If you're a school looking for help, or an EdTech company in need of advice, don't hesitate to reach out. I love what I do and I'm always willing to chat more. If you have questions that you want answered in this segment, please also reach out and I'll do my best to include it in an upcoming episode. A tool that has positively impacted the authentic and purposeful use of technology into classrooms and meeting rooms I've worked in is Twitter. A lot of you listening to today's podcast are connected with me on Twitter and have probably been connected for many years. Twitter has become a way of life for me and a way of learning. About 10 years ago, I got introduced to Twitter by Anne Canelli and Claire Buist at a small gathering of EdTech enthusiasts in little old Dunedin, New Zealand. I really didn't see the point then and didn't follow their worldly advice, and I didn't get into the Twitter buzz for another year, considerable time wasted in my professional growth journey. I look back at those times and think how crazy and different my life would be if Claire and Anne hadn't connected me. I certainly wouldn't be in Singapore, I wouldn't be connected to a PLN of 43,000 people, and I probably wouldn't have the opportunity to speak all over the world and support schools and EdTech companies as a consultant and an advisor. The opportunities that have come through being connected have changed my life for the better. So to celebrate Twitter and the impacts it's had on me as an educator and as a learner, I wanted to share my top tips for Twitter for teachers. Here they are. Number 1. Create an account. It's easy and there are thousands of educators all over the world already connecting, engaging and contributing in an extremely positive learning environment. It's not what you expect. If you avoid the rubbish and the politics and use it just for education and learning, you are in a treasure trove of learning. Now that I'm connected and engaged with so many educators, I learn what I want and when I want. Number 2. Understand a hashtag. Hashtags are used to help search and find what you want. For example, the hashtag EdTech is used when sharing or searching for anything related to educational technology. It's a way of collating what you're looking for and finding specific things. If you're a math teacher, you search Math Chat, or a kindergarten teacher might look up Kinder Chat. There's even a new teachers to Twitter hashtag, that is NT2T, new teachers to Twitter. Jump on board, connect with me, and I can help guide you, connect you, and show you the ropes. It's the best free PD you can use, and it's all at your fingertips right now. Number 3. Get involved in Twitter chats. Every week, there are hundreds of Twitter chats that normally last an hour and bring educators from all over the world together to talk about specific topics. It allows you to pick and choose and respond during a time frame that is dedicated and normally the same each week. It's a great way to get into a routine of using Twitter. There are some great lists that show different chats, their topics, themes, and the time that they're on in your specific time zone. I've put a list in the podcast description below. Number 4. Connect, follow, and engage in conversation. Twitter is all about connecting, sharing, and learning. Get involved and don't worry about where you are on your journey because there are hundreds of other people out there thinking the same thing. Follow people, share your ideas, ask questions, and retweet other people's tweets. Once you get started, you won't want to stop. It's seriously some of the best learning I've done. I always say to people at conference and events that I'm speaking at that I learn more from Twitter in a short 20-minute stint than I do in a full day of conference because I can find what I want when I want and ask experts for immediate responses. I hope those tips have helped you. I've shared some links in the podcast description below to get you started on your Twitter journey. Enjoy. If you're already connected, they might help your colleagues to get started too. Every week, I bring you a short interview with some of my edu heroes, an engaging learning experience with someone who makes a difference in education every day, with a particular focus or angle towards educational technology. This week, I had the pleasure of chatting with author, blogger, and keynote speaker, Tom Whitby. Let's have a listen. Today, I have the honor of speaking with Tom Whitby. You might know him as @TomWhitby on Twitter, with 81,000 followers, where he constantly shares Twitter tips, amazing facts, and support materials for educators. Tom is an author, blogger, and keynote speaker. He's a consultant and technology advocate, and constantly blogs about his ideas at TomWhitby.com. Tom, it is an incredible pleasure to have you on the show today. Are you ready to talk about education and technology integration?
I'm always ready for that, Craig.
So why don't you start by describing your current role and what inspires you to do what you do?
Well, my current role is pretty much as a blogger, as a podcaster, as a tweeter. I have written 2 books. And it's just, you know, my goal in life is to get educators better educated. The phrase that I often use in most of my writings is that, you know, if we are to better educate our kids, we need first to better educate their educators. I'm a big believer in adult learning, which is something that people are just beginning to explore now, which is really crazy to my way of thinking. I was a public school teacher for 34 years, and then I was an adjunct professor for 6 years after that in education. Through that entire career, I always stressed professional learning, and I was never satisfied with the way professional learning was delivered. You know, in America, people can kind of pick and choose those courses that they want to take for their professional learning. But unfortunately, people don't always know what it is they don't know. You like to give them freedom of choice, yeah, but you better give them a little guidance as to what is really needed. I think we see that now with what has gone on with this pandemic, the way it's affected everything that we do in education. For years, had theoretical discussions of blended learning and distance learning. Remote learning, as it were. These were just theoretical discussions. We found out a number of things that you know, we may have talked about before, but we didn't consider. The biggest problem we had was most of the educators now that are doing this remote learning were not really trained in how to do it. Students weren't trained in how to do it. Parents weren't trained in what it was. So all of that makes it a lot more difficult for it to be successful. People are struggling with it and getting more comfortable with it as the weeks go by. But again, it's something that we were thrown into. And in a good way, it was great that teachers had that personal relationship with their students before they got thrown into this, because it gave them a clearer understanding of who they were working with and what it was that they had to do. So that made it a little bit easier. Again, what I try to do is talk about andragogy more than anything else. And andragogy for adult learning. Is something that many educators are not familiar with. And the reason why is because pedagogy is what they have been trained in, you know, how to teach children. And the professional development part for educators has always been left to the educators to teach other educators. So they go to what they know, which is pedagogy, which is child learning, not adult learning. So we really have to instruct people on what drives adults to learn. You know, there are many, many differences. That being said, what I do is travel around the world, you know, certainly around the nation, talking about that. Education is global, and we have to stop and think about that as educators.
Yeah, that's an interesting one, isn't it? And I think even from what you've shared so far, you've just got a world of knowledge and a world of experience. So one of the things I'm interested in is your thoughts into what's happening now. What excites you about education today?
Well, right now we're in a state of flux. We don't know where it's going, but you know, through chaos comes opportunity, and we have been thrown into chaos here. I think what we're doing is we're looking at how we deliver education and understanding that we have to do things differently than we've done before. We're going to have to, when we come back and open up our schools again, we're going to pay attention to things like distancing and how many kids we have in a classroom. I think this has brought to light the digital gap that we have. Too often, education is determined by zip codes. And by that, I mean, it depends on where you live as to what kind of education you're going to get. And we're finding that in this digital world that people don't have access to the internet that we thought that they did. You know, we've talked about this before, but when you try and scale education online, you run into difficulties like, what do you do with a family who doesn't have access to the internet? What do you do with a family who may have four or five kids and only one device? What do you do with families that don't have any devices and no access to the internet? People have to travel to the library to get access to the internet. Not everybody can travel. So there are many things that are being highlighted, many negatives that are being highlighted that we are going to have to work on. I think everyone has the right to an education, and we can't deliver an equitable or equal education to everyone. And that's something that we really have to address. And I think this pandemic that we're going through now is opening up our eyes to things that have to change. And hopefully we're going to change once we return to whatever that new normal is going to be.
I think that's spot on, Tom. I think it's exactly the way everyone's feeling right now. It's the sense of not knowing what's next. I think you're in the business of giving advice. I mean, you do this on a daily basis. You help others, you support them in their learning. What's your best advice for educators in relation to EdTech?
Well, I'll tell you, I got my degree in educational technology many, many years ago. And not one piece of equipment or software that I learned on is in existence today. So, that being said, if any educator wants to stay relevant in education, they have to continually learn, and they have to be open to continually learning. And one of the biggest problems that we have in education is that when someone wants to become an educator, they get in their mind, this is what they want to do. So they go out and they get their degree, and then they get their license, and then they get their job. And once that happens, they've accomplished what it is they wanted to accomplish, and they think everything is over. They don't realize, and I'm generalizing here, but many don't realize that the profession they have entered requires on a daily basis that they continually learn. And this has to be part of the job. And it's not really in anybody's job description that will take place. And schools don't really support it because it's an expensive thing to do. And that's the conundrum that we're in. In order to stay relevant, you have to stay educated and continually educate yourself. In order to do that, it's very difficult to do without the support from the people who hired you for the job. So we have to have school districts start thinking differently about professional development. They have to support it, not only with money, but also with time. They have to enable teachers to innovate in education. We often talk about teaching out of the box. We're looking for innovative ideas in education. Well, you can't teach out of the box when you've got in-the-box administration. So you can't tell teachers you want them to innovate, and then all of your policies and mandates prevent that from happening. If you're going to have teachers innovate, you have to support them with time to collaborate with other individuals. You have to supply coaching for them so that they can get some instant feedback. Feedback is one of the best tools educators have in the form of formative assessment. And we have to understand that as much as we want assessment for our students, we also have to have that formative assessment for our teachers as they're learning their own profession and continue to learn their own profession. So that feedback as to how successful they are and what they have to do to be more successful has to be provided by somebody, or at least the time provided so that your peers can get in there and look at what you're doing and give you feedback. This is a missing component that we have in professional development. We're starting to get it now. You're starting to see more and more professional coaches within school districts where their only job is to work with teachers, giving them feedback into what it is they're doing. So we're starting to see that more and more.
Yeah, and I think we've probably got a few people listening today that are sitting here listening going, yeah, that's all well and good, but how do we help move these teachers that either they think they know it all or they're super negative when it comes to educational technology? How do we move them to be more creative, more innovative, being willing to take risks when it comes to using technology to support student learning. What's your best advice that you'd give them?
Well, you're not going to start with them. You have to start with everything else. If you expect great change, you can't change the system until you change the culture. The culture has to come first, and our culture isn't there yet. We're not supportive of innovation. We like to say that we are, but you know, when it comes right down to it, we're not providing anything that is supporting innovation. Again, it comes down to time and money. And those are things we kind of have to look at the way we finance education. If we would finance education the same way we finance defense, there would not be a problem with this. But that's not what we do. And again, that comes down to, you know, what zip code a kid is born into as to what kind of education they're going to get. There are some communities that support it with taxes, and there are other communities that don't. So depending on the luck of the draw, you know, and where you live, you're either going to get a quality education or you're not. And these are things that we have to look at. We have to examine it, and we have to say, you know, we have a problem here. Education is very slow to change. And if we keep doing what we're doing, and we're talking about a 200-300 year public education history here, obviously, you know, it's not working for everybody. If it did, we wouldn't be having these discussions. You know, there are certain givens that we have and myths that are being perpetuated just because this is the way it's always been and this is the way we will continue to do it. That mindset has to change. And people have to understand that we are in a world that is, it's totally dominated by the influence of technology. It forces things to change at a much more rapid rate than ever before in the history of mankind. And that change has to be met with educators who are willing to change with it. We can't be teaching our kids for what it is they need to know today when they're going to be living in a world that is completely different from today. They're moving forward, and we as educators are staying in the same place, and that has to change.
Yeah, totally. I couldn't agree more. Absolutely. I think it's this ongoing conversation that we're having in countries all over the world. I think this conversation is the same, whether you're in the US or you're in the UK or you're in Singapore, New Zealand, Australia, Dubai. The conversations are the same, yet we don't appear to be moving forward. So I love everything you've said there about that bigger conversation, the importance of culture and actually making these steps to move forward. And maybe an event like what we're in right now might help us do that. So we've talked, I guess, a little bit about us as a profession of educators. I want to narrow it down to you, and I want to sort of ask you a little bit about your day-to-day work. What's an EdTech tool that you use all the time in your day-to-day work that you think everyone else should be using?
There's so much stuff out there. I'll tell you, one of the things that has affected me professionally that I would recommend everybody to do is blog. And I use WordPress. It's very simple to use, but when it comes to blogging, I'm able to sit down and think about things that I want to talk about, collect my thoughts, organize them. And then when I write a post, I try and anticipate all of the objections to that post as I'm writing it. You know, what would people think about this if I wrote it? What would they think about that? What is it they would argue, so that I can kind of meet their arguments within the post before I publish it. I'm kind of anticipating what kind of blowback I'm going to get on things that I have to say about. So it's enabled me to think better, organize, and also go back and look at who I was back then. I mean, I've been blogging now for 5-6 years. What's amazing is when I first started out blogging, I didn't think I'd have enough to say for 3 weeks, but I did it, and I'm still doing it. It was a natural progression because when I started out tweeting, it was kind of like blogging. Back in the day when I first started out, you only had 120 characters to work with, not 240. You had to be very concise in what you were saying, and you had to get to the point real quick. So tweeting helped me a great deal in collecting my thoughts and collaborating with teachers. It was a great way to connect with people, and it still is. So that's how I was able to develop a professional learning network, was through Twitter specifically. That was kind of like the backbone of what I did. I also used LinkedIn, but Twitter was the thing that they got things going. And that's when I started, one of the founders of EdChat. And EdChat started out as a conversation with educators. We would come up with these ideas that we wanted to talk about, and we would tweet them. And if you were involved with what was going on, it was enlightening. But what we did was decided to come up with a topic that people could talk about. So we would gather people to be tweeting at a certain specific time. And when we first started it, we had like 1,000 tweets coming out in an hour. It was an amazing thing. We were training on Twitter when we first started EdChat. And that's when time zones became important to me, because we got requests from educators in Europe and educators in Asia, either wanting us to start it later or start it earlier, depending on their time zones. So we actually started a second EdChat. We had one going off at 7 o'clock New York time in the evening. And then the other one we did at 12 noon to kind of accommodate teachers around the world, because EdChat at that time, it was the only chat that was going on. People didn't understand what chats were at that point, because it was new, it was innovative. So we were really accommodating teachers globally, which was a very important thing for us. We had a great time doing it. Now, you know, there are chats all over the place. You know, people just took that model and developed it, which is great. So two things that I use all the time would be Twitter, and for my blog posts would be WordPress. In order to move on as a professional, it gives you connections with people that you've never had before. Certainly, when I was teaching in college, textbooks were very, very expensive. They still are. And Jim Burke was a great English teacher, great author for English textbooks. I had my students on his website. The students were connecting with English teachers, because I was preparing English students to become teachers in education. So they were contacting other English teachers around the country through this website. So those connections were being made. My direct report, the person that I reported to, questioned why my students weren't buying the textbook that Jim Burke wrote. And my answer to them was, why do I need a textbook that Jim Burke wrote when my students are connecting directly with Jim Burke? And they were, and it was something that they didn't understand, but they had personal contact with the exact same guy that wrote their text, and that worked out really well, you know, as far as I was concerned, because they started to see the power of connection and how to stay relevant by contacting the very people that are the thought leaders in education, and having personal contact with those people. You know, here you and I are sitting here today because you reached out to me on Twitter and said, I'd like to interview you. Fine, here I am. You know, now we're talking about this. And you know, every time I do that and I talk to somebody who I've always looked up to, I'm astounded that it's that simple a thing to do. Yet you get to pick the brains of some of the great thought leaders out there, and you know, and then the next time I go to a national conference, I see them, and it's like we were friends the entire time.
It's amazing, isn't it? That whole social media connection piece, when you meet face to face, it feels like you've known each other for years. So, I mean, Tom, learning's important to everyone, educators in particular. What's one book or one resource that you've been reading lately, or one of your all-time favorites? Tell us why we should explore it as well.
To tell you the truth, I'm not reading books as much as I'm reading blog posts these days. That's you know, I go from post to post to post, and that's how I spend most of my day. Actually, I started reading. I don't know if you're familiar with Lee Child. Lee Child is up. He's a writer. Wrote the Jack Reacher series. I saw a Jack Reacher movie with Tom Cruise in it. And I was fascinated by the character and everything. So I looked up the author, and I found Jack Lee Child. And he wrote like 24 books about Jack Reacher. So I figured, I'm going to get all these books, and I'm going to start from beginning to the end. I did this back in the 60s when I discovered James Bond. So I started reading the Jack Reacher series, and that's my basic reading, is what I've been doing. because I'm reading daily. I'm reading posts, which are probably the most relevant thoughts that thought leaders have, and the most up-to-date thinking. So if you stay up with those blog posts that are going on, you know, it's there. It's there for you. And the other thing about connecting is again, I rather talk to these authors about their thoughts to be reading the books that you know, sometimes go in one ear and out the other, unfortunately.
Yeah, I have to agree. I think I'm a blog post reader as well, and I'm the spur of the moment. If I fall upon it, I'm going to go for it type person. So it's good to hear someone else is the same. I mean, Tom, you're an author as well. You've written books. What inspired you to write those books, and tell us a little bit about them? Why should we read them?
Well, the first book that I did was The Relevant Educator. Steven Anderson and I wrote that together. It talks about everything that we've been talking about here, the idea how in order to be an educator, you have to be relevant. You have to be technology literate. Unfortunately, we're finding out too many educators are not technologically literate, and we don't need illiterate educators. When we talk about technology today, you have to be literate. It is the way that we curate information. It's the way that we communicate information. It's the way we create information. If that's what we're teaching kids to do, and you're not part of doing that through technology, you're not a relevant educator. So there was a need for someone to point that out. And Stephen and I wrote that book to do that very thing. And then the second book that I did was called An Educator's Guide to Creating Connections. And that I didn't write so much. I mean, I think I wrote two chapters in that book, but I gathered a number of at the time thought leaders, and each of them did a chapter on what they were most experienced at, which I was very pleased with. So it was like a compilation of the best people in the best areas for me to contact and get information out to educators who really needed it.
You sort of found that niche and jumped on it. And I love that. And I think there's still plenty of opportunities for people, I think, as well. Those listening to this, I think, jump in there. Do your writing. Start with blogging. I think that's where I sort of got excited about writing. I blogged. I wrote. That's why I wanted to get into a podcast. I feel like I'm a better talker than I am a writer sometimes. So I think just getting people excited about that. Tom, you've shared so many insights and so much inspiration in the short chat we've had today. What's the best way for the listeners to follow and connect with you?
Well, my blog post is My Island View, and you can get there by I'm on tomwhitby.com is the best way to get to it. Also, EdChat Radio. I've got my podcast, which is the EdChat Radio Show, and that's on the BAM Radio Network. And basically what we do is we talk about whatever the EdChat topic was that week, you know, our impressions of the topic and our impressions of how people responded to it. So it's been a big hit for them, and it's been an okay thing for me too, as long as people are talking about the right thing. So that podcast has become much bigger than I ever anticipated it.
I love it. Tom, thank you so much for your time today. I appreciate it.
Craig, you're so welcome.
Next week, join me for episode 9 of the EdTech Chat podcast, when I'm joined by someone who's leading digital citizenship learning globally. She's an ex-police officer, Australia's leading cyber safety expert, and a published author, Susan McLean. One of the things I love doing is giving away prizes as a thank you for tuning in, listening, and hopefully subscribing to the EdTech Chat podcast. Last week, Schoolbox gave away 1 hour of free consultancy support to help you create a more seamless ed stack. To win, you needed to complete the form at bit.ly/edtechwin. The winner has already been contacted directly by me, and it is Ritu Seiji. Congratulations, Ritu. This week, our sponsor Schoolbox is giving away another 1 hour of free consultancy to help you create a more seamless ed stack. This hour can be used however you want, so get entering. To win the hour of consultancy from Schoolbox, you need to go to bit.ly/edtechwin and complete the simple form and finish this sentence. Schoolbox is an all-in-one... It'll take you less than 2 minutes. The link is in the description, and it's super simple. Competition closes on Wednesday the 1st of July, and the winner will be contacted directly by me and announced on next Friday's podcast episode. Good luck. If you enjoyed today's episode, please smash that subscribe button and share it with your colleagues, friends, and families. I appreciate your support. Please remember to spend 2 minutes to rate the podcast too, so I can reach even more educators and edtech enthusiasts globally. Please share your favorite part of today's episode by tagging me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, or LinkedIn. And please don't hesitate to ask me questions that I can answer in an upcoming episode. Remember, you have the chance to win as well. Check out the links in the description for more, and I'll see you again next week.
Thank you for listening to the EdTech Chat Podcast, creating a community for educators to learn, share, and grow. If you liked today's episode, please don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss another episode, and be in the drawing to win prizes every week. If you know others that would enjoy the show, please hit that share button and brighten their day. Join us again next week for your weekly EdTech Hit with @MrKempNZ. We'll see you again soon.